With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
5 times are hitting the road again this summer, and it's the Champions League heroes heading to Ireland in August.
Andrei Shevchenko, the European Footballer of the Year, star man in the Milan side, must score.
He must score.
He saved it! Gullit saved! For Liverpool! And Liverpool have won the Champions League!
This is amazing! Can you believe it?
Jamie Carragher and Luis Garcia host a gala dinner at the Marker Hotel in Dublin, August 20th.
Once a European champion, always a European champion.
24 hours later, Luis Garcia, Didi Haman and Jamie Carragher are at the Waterfront Theatre Belfast, August 21st. Then in September, Barnes, Aldridge and Haman in London on Thursday the 11th. Fowler, McAteer and Whelan in Newport, South Wales on Thursday the 18th. All details and tickets of all those events on 5times.co/events. It'd be great to see you there.
Liverpool have their hands on the European Cup again, and this time it's for keeps.
Welcome to the first podcast of the year. It's great to be back. Obviously, it's been a busy summer with the World Cup. A lot of the lads have been away after a fantastic season last year. It's great to get going again. The season's nearly upon us, nearly only 3 weeks to go. Just a couple of things to let you know about. We've got nights coming up in Norway, Dublin, Belfast, London and Wales. As always, check out the 5times.co/events for all the details. We had some fantastic nights last year, went all over the world, certain charities doing nights all over the place. It was absolutely fantastic, so we've got plenty more coming up. Like I say, if you want to get them tickets for them events, go to 5times.co/events, where all the details will be on the website. Also, if you think a legend visit would work, anything to do with your company, or you want to set up a night, or you want any of the lads to visit you anywhere in the world, preferably Hawaii, Seychelles, Maldives, Dubai, anywhere like that, the lads are quite willing to come over and to entertain, as we did last season. So get in touch. Like I say, I'll send that address again. It's 5times.co/events for all the details.
So the first podcast of the season is going to get underway, and I couldn't think of two better people. Well, I could actually, but they're on holiday. So we brought these two along. Roy Evans and John Barnes are with us. Yeah, probably the two best to open the season with. I've got to talk World Cup first. Diggy, you South Africa?
Yep. Yeah, I mean, World Cup is always fantastic no matter where you are. And while I wasn't in Brazil, people keep saying, what it was like over there. I tell you, it's probably the same as any country in the world whereby it grips the whole country. You know, obviously the World Cup was in South Africa in 2010, and when it was there, you can see how much the nation embraced it. But although now, 2014, you're in Brazil, the World Cup, in terms of the way that the whole country embraced the World Cup in South Africa, was exactly the same, apart from obviously, you know, the stadiums weren't full. But the World Cup is fantastic, and, you know, the goals that were scored, the amount of goals that were scored, which for me, I thought it would be much tighter. Forget about the semi-final with Brazil, but even the goals up until that point were probably the most goals scored since France 98. So it was just a great occasion.
And after you were in America, weren't you? I tried to get hold of you at one point, but you were over there coaching.
Yeah, doing coaching, trying to get some kids into college and different things. It was really good, but it's a bit strange actually. I've been coaching the Americans, and they lasted longer than us.
Yeah, well,
it was a bit embarrassing.
I wanted to ask you there, because when we found out you were in America, obviously we tried to get you on the phone, but it was just difficult with the times and stuff. But the American World Cup campaign really took off. Obviously, the president got involved, and you know they nearly won the World Series, didn't they? But it was it was good. So you were over there when all that was going on. How was it?
Well, it was great. Obviously, Americans were delighted the way they performed at the end of the day. And once they got to that certain stage, yeah, everybody joined in. Obviously, the president and everybody
was
else.
It like that where you were?
Yeah, even in Daytona, it was there. It was really good. Everyone was getting sort of up for it. And I have to say, I mean, the Americans have come a long way over many years, and the game is getting certainly bigger and bigger over there. They just probably lack a little bit in between the professional side and school. There's nothing in the middle. There's no amateur leagues, if you like. So that's where they don't pick up.
Was there a real belief that the Americans were going to go all the way, as obviously it's coming out of their camp, you know, Klinsmann the way he was and stuff? Did the people believe that, or were they just didn't?
I mean, all the football people, or soccer people, as they would call it, like, basically, like, the Premier League, they love the Premier League. They watch the Premier League week in, week out, and, you know, it goes on all throughout the US. But for them to start believing in their own country to do really well, I think that was really something fantastic for them. I mean, they're all supporters of different clubs, Liverpool, Man U, whatever it is, and the Italians and the Spanish. So it's great for them to have a little feeling that they've got players that can qualify for the World Cup.
But there are two sets of people in the US, people who know about football and who understand that America maximizes their potential. They can get to the quarterfinals, maybe they can go on. And then there are others who, when the World Cup comes around, are interested in it and believe that USA can win the World Cup because they are USA. Oh, okay. They don't know much about football, but they know we are USA, so we should win.
Like the president.
Yeah. And Tom Hanks. And Rihanna, although she won a German
win.
But the problem you have in America, but the biggest problem you have in America, and Roy mentioned the fact there are two sides of it. You're looking at it from the professional level and then the because it's probably the most played sport for youngsters and for women and for girls, because that's the way it's seen.
Yeah,
the biggest problem they have is that it is a middle-class sport in America, and America is so strange because it's a working-class sport all over the world. You've got kids with no shoes in Brazil who can play football, and you listen to Americans, and Americans say sometimes they can't afford to play football. It's a middle-class sport. Now, where America, for me, would improve is if you go into the inner cities and you get these athletes who are playing basketball, American football, baseball, and have that hunger and that desire and that mentality to then play soccer. Because, you know, the real athletes in America go and play all the sports, and then if they don't, they play football. And it's still perceived to be a kid's sport and a woman's sport. So therefore, you're not really getting all of them. You look at Brad and all of these American players, all go to university, they're all intelligent, they're all middle class, whereas if they can then go into the inner cities to get these real hungry athletes, that's when they can.
I think you're right, actually, but by the same token, the recognised American sports will not really let football in.
No, it can't.
I mean, the line I played over there a long time ago was difficult to get on the ladder, and that's the big thing. They make sure that soccer does not take over.
Even in terms of the way that the game is, it's not because obviously if it could be more marketable, and it isn't, it's 2 45-minute halves. In American football, baseball, you have timeouts, you have stoppages. Mm. That's where the sponsors get on board, obviously, to get all the strap lines in, and that's where they pay more money. Now, because of the way football is in America, soccer is in America, it is not marketable from the sponsor's point of view because you can't advertise that much, so therefore you can't pay. So therefore, from a financial point of view, they're never going to be able to compete with them. And of course, historically as well, baseball and American football are the two number one sports.
How far away do you think they actually are?
Listen, every time the World Cup comes around, people get involved and they'll be hungry and they say, now that, you know, David Beckham went there and then now all of a sudden Thierry Henry, but not forgetting in the 70s Pele went there.
Yeah. Great athletes, great athletes. Still haven't, obviously through the genes, got a John Barnes, or a Messi or something like that. That's probably difficult to come through because mums and dads haven't played football over the years.
And what they're taking also are players at the end of their career.
Yeah.
You're not going to get a Messi at 25 going there because financially they can't afford to do that. Now, it's nothing to do with the popularity of football. It's to do with the fact that from a sponsor's point of view, there are other games which are more marketable from a financial point of view. Historically, there are more games which you'll be able to pay more money to these athletes for. So, you know, as much as we are now getting excited again, because in fact, they had more people in America watching the World Cup than anywhere else. In fact, more people, Americans, went to the World Cup, but that's every 4 years. To then say that the league is going to take off, it'll still, you know, you're still playing second fiddle to baseball in America.
Every time it takes off, John, it goes down. They knock it back. I mean, years ago,
Pelly went there.
Same time. We won it, so there you go. That's how bad they were. But we won it.
I wonder, never took off.
In general, then, the World Cup success, I mean,
it was a fantastic success, the way it was up. I was worried about the violence and all the bits and the
before.
It was fantastic. For England, I thought it was a disaster.
I was going to get on to
people kept talking about positives and about young players. For me, it was a disaster. And obviously, the manager has got to take some of the blame at the end of the day. I thought he picked players instead of teams. You know. And you know, again, when things were going wrong, he didn't change anything. You know, like Rooney was playing in front of Baines, it wasn't working after 10 minutes, so change it somewhere. I really, really felt very disappointed after the World Cup about England.
Yeah, I think that from the World Cup point of view, an unqualified success, and I always felt it would be, because no matter what, because that's what football is about. No matter where you have it, and as much as people talk about South Africa in 2010, the problems with the violence, Brazil, there's going to be problems. And, you know, a lot of people then talk about problems depending on where it's going to be.
Like Qatar and wherever. Russia.
But I can tell you, once the World Cup starts, because of the popularity of football, which is why it's a success, that's why FIFA, really, as far as I'm concerned, are just on a winner. One, not to say that I believe in their integrity. I'm
not
talking about
that, yeah.
No. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about that. No matter where it's held, it's going to be a success because people love football so much. I agree with Warren from England's perspective. We then have to be realistic in terms of how good we think we are, because I've seen the way we treat our players here. First of all, you have to say that the England national team, they have 30% of players to choose from in the Premier League. The strength of the Premier League, which is where you judge, unfortunately, they judge the national team on the strength of the Premier League, which they shouldn't. 33% players in the Premier League are English. That's who he has to choose from. More damning and more important is what are the percentage of the players in the top five teams. Forget about the whole 18 teams. The top five teams is even less. So you look at the point of view of all of a sudden players come to the end of their careers, Steven Gerrard, Frank Lampard, people like that, who have been great professionals, still didn't win the World Cup, but great professionals. And all of a sudden we have no one in between. We've got good young players, good old players. So the expectation for me, and as much as we said, oh, we don't expect anything from there, go on there and play. We overemphasize how good we think we are. You know, all of our players, particularly our young players coming through, and unless they're told they have to improve, because we already told them that they're fantastic, they're great, Sterling, Lallana, all of these players, and they've got great potential. But unless we actually keep them in check to then say, listen, you have great potential, but you have to improve, from what we tell them as fans, from what we tell them in the media, how great we are, they're going to take us forward and win the World Cup because they're great players. They have a long way to go.
Did he succumb to changing his game plan because he felt the pressure of playing the kids and go through them in?
Jason, at the end of the day, you don't know what's in Roy's mind. But the whole process for me is that I think, as a manager of your country, or any country, you can't sort of throw kids in just for the sake of you've got to play your best team. And if some of the older guys are still good enough and better than the kids, it's not a place to go and try out your young kids the World Cup. You go to the World Cup to try and win. You know what the esteem is for the people of England. And watching the team go there and to come back with a whimper, really, wasn't it? Now, at the end of the day, for me, if an older guy is still better than the younger guy, okay, play him in the under-21s and let him get his experience in different places. Don't take them there to get experience. Take them there to win.
And also, you also have to look at the character of the manager. And you have to say the manager has to be true to his own philosophy and his own character. Now, it is not Roy Hodgson's character, as we've known for the last 30 years, for him to be picking Sterling and Alan and Wilshere and all of these players, because that's not who he is. And as much as there's pressure for him to do that, you have to be true to yourself. And if what has got you where you are to be the England manager, and what's got you success when you coach Switzerland and these teams by playing four hard-working midfield players without much flair, because that is what you believe in and that's the way you are, which is what Roy Hodgson does, that's what he has to do. And I think he succumbed to the fact that, and it was easy for him to do that, because what will then happen is that if you're not successful, you can then say, well, I did what everyone wanted. I played the Wilshers and I played the Lallanas and then we played Sterlings and this is what we have to do. So therefore, or he could have played more James Milner, more hard-working players who no one likes, but then, you know, go through in the groups, I think they possibly could have. But I think he succumbed to the pressure a little bit in that team.
That's the balance of your team, isn't it? I mean, it's great to have fantastic players. I mean, if you pick your very best 11 best footballers, it's not always your best team.
Absolutely.
And so that is part of management, too, isn't it? You know,
but he's handled that. He's handled that for the last 20 years. Because, you know, and if you look at even when he was at Liverpool, in terms of maybe because of the way Liverpool wanted to play other players he actually had, that wouldn't work for him. But not to say he couldn't go to West Brom or a team and do that. So that is why when he manages England, he has to then say, well, what do I believe in as a manager to then say for me to get success? And if it means not playing the Liverpool way, not playing an expansive way, which is what the public are saying, play all these flair players, for me to be true to myself, I think that's what he should have done.
Expectation is high, it's massive, isn't it? I mean, it's massive for Liverpool, for Man United, you know, Chelsea, whatever. But when you're the England manager, the expectation of the whole country is massive. So you have to go there with a belief that you can win. For me, and if you don't go there with that belief, then you've wasted your time.
Obviously, we're here to talk about Liverpool and the up and coming season, and obviously there's been a big story that's come after the World Cup that involves obviously the Liverpool captain, and obviously there's an instance that happened in the World Cup that involved one of Liverpool's strikers. I think we'll touch on Steven Gerrard retiring from international football. Good decision.
Well, I always believe that any decision any player makes is the right decision. And as much as people can say you could continue, he's the only one who knows. And if Liverpool are now going to be playing in the Champions League, and, you know, in between Champions League and league is when international matches are played, then he feels that his body can't do that, fine. But, you know, for me, the integrity of his timing has been unbelievable. Because
in a good way or bad way?
In a good way, yeah. Because you could forgive him for saying, I'm going to be involved in three more games to be the most capped outfield player. But if he feels that, you know, either from the point of view of me not being able to play, or I just don't want to be on the bench because, you know, David Beckham was on the bench for his last 15 England games, coming off for 5 minutes to get that amount of caps, which shows he just wanted the caps. And Steven can easily overtake him in the next three games and retire after that. So for him to stop now, I don't know whether I would have done that. Although I'm a man of integrity. However, the temptation to be the most capped outfield player, which he could easily have done, because, you know, of all his, most of his 114 England caps he has played. So for him to retire now just shows that, you know, he has the right integrity for football rather than just wanting to be the most capped player.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, obviously, he's talked with Brendan about it as well. Obviously, being in Champions League, I think he's made a very honest decision at the end of the day. I mean, that he could have stayed the next few games, I think he's done it at the right time. It's a new start for everybody. And Stephen, we hope we'll get the best out of Stephen for us, because it's going to be a challenging season for him.
And we hope he doesn't regret it in 20 years when no one knows him. And say, who's the most capped England player? Was David Beckham 115? Who's got second? You get nothing for second.
Our fans will always remember him, that's for sure. That's a definite thing, is it?
And as from a club level, obviously, hopefully prolongs his career.
Yeah, it will prolong his career at the end of the day. But, I mean, I think sometimes, you know, what the season goes. Now there'll be no little breaks from it. I mean,
yeah.
So if you get the chance now, when it comes to international weeks, if you're the manager, you might say, take a few days off, you know, nip down to Spain for a couple of days with your family.
I'd be fine now.
I'd be through with the lads.
No, but we went with Kenny years ago. We like with Kenny. Sometimes he didn't train until Thursday. We sort of tried to keep him as long as we could because of the ability he's got. So
obviously the biggest probably talking point for the World Cup, certainly from Liverpool's point of view, was obviously the Luis Suarez incident. What was your reaction to when it first happened? Did you watch it live? Did you see it?
I mean, you're shocked again, and you go, "No, what are you doing?" I mean, it's an infantile thing. It's got to be something that's in his genes, or something that's happened somewhere. At the end of the day, the only thing I would say, I mean, I am a Luis Suarez fan. I think he's the great player to watch. I've enjoyed watching the last two or three years. To put it in perspective slightly, he hasn't broken anybody's leg. He hasn't finished anybody's career. All he's done is try to bite. And in our culture, biting, spitting, scratching, you know, it's not allowed with our kids. And I think he looks like a kid when he does it. Because he just goes about to bite them. He just gets his teeth on and then he goes, no. It's like he gets the shock of it. You can't do it. I can't condone it. I can't even stand up for them, whatever. What I will stand up and say, that there have been a lot worse things in football. There are a lot worse things in Brazil. David Luiz in one of the games smashing people twice in the nose and different things. But at the end of the day, we can't condone you. You've got to be, you know, sort of brought to task for it. Will he ever learn? I don't know. But I can honestly say, I think he was a great, great player for Liverpool. I enjoyed watching him week in, week out. And I wish him well. He's gone. But like anything else, he's gone. He's Barcelona. He obviously wanted to go. You can't keep someone who doesn't want to stay. But I wish him very well because he was great for us.
He was. And Roy said right at the start about culturally, because if you look at the response that he's had from everybody in Uruguay, Prime Minister and everybody else, who have, while not condoning it, they've said, well, it's not as bad as people are making out. As Roy says, he hasn't shot anyone, he broke anybody's leg. So while it's unacceptable, we have to look and say people are different and people accept certain things. I remember, you know, in the old days when a good old English 50-50 tackle, which could hurt somebody, which is completely accepted here, they'll frown upon that in South America because it could hurt somebody. Whereas spitting on him, it's not nice, but that's not as bad. So it is a cultural thing. However, from the point of view of, for me, it's more to do with the frustration in him when things aren't going his way. And it seems that it's strange because he seems to get frustrated very easily. Because if you look at when he actually did that, Uruguay are still going to go through. It's nil all. Maybe he's not playing well, but it's not as if they're going out to the World Cup. They're 3-0 down. He's missed five open goals, so why get frustrated? He seems to get frustrated very quickly, very much like the one against Chelsea. So from that point of view, this is something that's in him, which is, you know, I think too much is made of it. which is fine. However, from the Liverpool perspective, we can't be held to ransom to whether Luis Suarez is going to be happy or not from game in to game out. I mean, last year, when they said about how Luis Suarez, and they said to me he's different to Torres because he'd give 100%, and he will, and he does. And even when he wanted to leave, and he didn't leave, he still gave 100%, and things were going well. But the test of character, for me, and the testament of the character of the player in terms of his commitment, it's not when things are going well, it's when things aren't going well. So had he come to Liverpool, started off this season, and not scored for the first five games, and Liverpool aren't playing well, then that would have reared its head again. Well, I don't want to be here. Now, you want a player to be at Liverpool if they're losing every game, if they're winning every game. So you can't go from, and I think with Luis Suarez, the time had come, because I don't think that this would ever have been resolved. Even if he'd signed a new contract and he says he's happy, I'm sure if the season hadn't started off well, or if he's going through a lean spell, that is when you'd all of a sudden see his lack of commitment. So I think he's a fantastic player, great player, and he'd served Liverpool well. But I'm sure Roy will remember, I'm a bit too young, but Billy Little, of course, was the same. Then he left, and then Kevin Keegan came and he left, and Kenny Dalglish came and he left, Ian Rush came, Robbie Fowler came, now Luis Suarez is gone. So we shouldn't overemphasize the importance of any individual player, and I think we've done that with, we did it with Torres, and now we did it with Suarez, so now hopefully we can then move on, because if you look at the players we've got, look at the signings we're going to make, I think the squad and the team will be better. Yes, we're going to miss 30 goals a season, but we can see other players scoring goals. Right. We can see us being better balanced. And I think that Daniel Sturridge really, not that he has to come out of his shell because he had a great season, but I think he could take on the mantle now to be not the new Luis Suarez, but to really show his worth.
I just think one little bit with Sturridge and Suarez at the end of the day, at the end of the season, I just thought they were playing against each other. Yeah. To outshine each other. Yeah. And that was a little bit of worry to me. It's just something you would have tried to say to them. Make sure you play together, not against each other. But at the end of the day, I think Studies will blossom.
Yeah, I mean, and you saw it in the last few games when things probably weren't going too well. They were frustrated with each other. Now, if you can be frustrated with each other when you are top of the league, second in the league, going for the championship, imagine if you're then fourth or fifth or things aren't going well, what relationship will you have then? And I really felt it was more Suarez than Sturridge, because I think Sturridge still felt that, you know, I'm playing second fiddle to him. But of course, after doing so well in the first six games, you know, his confidence grew, his stature grew, and then he started to become a little bit more, well, I'm equal to you, so pass to me and let's do things together. Whereas you can never do that. And that's why it's so interesting to see how he goes at Barcelona, because there's only one person at Barcelona, Messi. If he thinks he's going to go there and take up for Messi, he's wrong. So why is he going to play?
Well,
even Neymar has to be humble to Messi. Yeah. You saw it last year. Neymar stays up wide, and if there's any free kicks, anything, Messi decides. So that's why it's a strange move. I thought Real Madrid would have been a more move for him, because that's where you have individual superstars.
You see that Ronaldo and Bale, don't you?
Yeah, Bale is subservient. Now, is Suarez going to be subservient to Messi? We don't know. But from the Liverpool perspective, I really felt we had to draw a line under it. And a line being drawn on the Luis Suarez saga is that, Luis, you're here for 5 years. Let's not talk about you leaving anywhere again from year in, year out, week in, week out. So that's it. There's a line under it, which I don't think would ever have happened. Or the line is, now you've gone. And for me, that was the right thing to do.
I thought Liverpool handled it really, really well. They didn't make any rash decisions. They didn't come out and speak their mind straight away. I mean, from a manager's point of view, as obviously you've been the manager, and it's great to have you ask this question. What goes through a manager's mind? What would be going through Brendan's mind as soon as he sees that incident? What happens there? What's the process there?
I think you're devastated. At the end of the day, I mean, obviously it's happened before so many times, and you think, what do we have to do? And to be fair, I think Lewis has cleaned up his game so much from the start of last season when he missed the games. I mean, obviously Brendan's had good talks to him, and I mean, he even stopped like throwing the diving so much. He didn't dive as much. He didn't do that. He still went down easy, but that's the type of player he is. But you think, well, he's got past all that, and you think he's now grown up. He's a grown man, and then he does it again, and so it leaves us at a loss. I mean, what can you do? You can get psychologists, you can get everything at the end of the day, but it's about the man himself, isn't it? And I mean, they've said no one's bigger than the club.
Is something like that taken out of your hands? Would the owners step in there? Would the chairman ring you up?
I would think that in all honesty, they would have tried to keep Luis Suarez because he's a great player. They would talk to him, say, "We don't want you to go." But as we've said at the start of it, if your top player wants to go somewhere else because obviously his wife's got family there, whatever. Mm. Once they've got that in their mind, it's detrimental to keep them for him. I mean, they just will bring the rest of the squad down, because if he wants to leave, he can mess around, he can whatever he wants. To be fair to Luis Suarez, and all the time he said he wanted to go, his effort's still been fantastic, I have to say that, and when he gets on the pitch, he does his stuff. But keeps on and forever. He has to go, and he's gone. And we say we wish him well, but we've got another team now. We've got a different type of team, different style to it.
I think that would help Liverpool. I think that internet would help Liverpool. Why I say that is because before the World Cup, there was talk about Barcelona, and now it's here we go again. Now, had that incident not happened, they would have been under more pressure to keep him because he would have played in the World Cup, scored, been the top scorer, played really well. Whereas, knowing that he's going to go anyway, how could you then sell him after having a great World Cup? I think that incident, as much as, you know, it's not a nice incident, I think that's helped Liverpool slightly in that they know he wants to go. They know he's going to go. And here, this kind of like gives them a bit of a reason as well to let him go, get the money, and then say, well, we tried to help him a lot, we supported him. Whereas I think had that incident not happened and they would have sold him, I think they could have come in for criticism from the fans by saying, why didn't we try harder to keep him? And they've tried hard to keep him. But once you want to go, as Roy says, you want to go. But what that does, that gives you a get-out clause insofar as we know he's going to go. And from the fans' perspective, they're going to have a go at us for letting him go. But at least that kind of softens the blow because we can then say from a point of view of integrity, although they haven't said that, but a lot of people say, well, yes, now it's time for him to go.
Do you still think he would have gone? Even if this incident hadn't have happened?
I think so. Absolutely.
You always felt that he's been talked about for the, and he said that I've always wanted to go back to Barcelona because of my wife. But it's like he's not the first, is he? And he won't be the last.
Yeah.
We at Liverpool, unfortunately, think that you should spend your whole career because we've had so many people that have come to Liverpool and stayed. You have to remember, like Keegan Wentz, after winning the European Cup.
And that was a shock, wasn't it?
You know, McManaman, Owen.
Tom Barnes,
Newcastle, remember?
Yeah,
Mate,
I never left.
But even people have given like 10 years. Macca gave 10 years to us. Steve McManaman for 10 years. And Michael gave us many years. And the fans go, oh, they're going there, they're traitors. And
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That's the way football is.
Listen, I always said I want Luis Suarez to want to stay at Liverpool. I want him to want to stay. If he doesn't want to stay, then I think I don't want him to stay if he doesn't want to stay. But the problem we would have had he stayed is that I'm sure, because you look at what's happening in the World Cup, and you look at before the World Cup, Barcelona, Real Madrid, blah, blah, blah. We'd have started the season with him. And 3 games into the season, we could have had that. Or come January, we could have had that. And I think that's quite unsettling from a fan perspective, from a club perspective. Mm. Your number one player, keep going. And there's no way that had he stayed, that whole thing about Barcelona Real Madrid would have gone away. It would have come around again in 6 games. It would have come around again in January. And it would have come around again at the end of the season. And you cannot just keep going every 6 months from a manager's point of view when you're talking about looking to the future to build, where your best player is talking about leaving every 2 or 3 months.
One last question. Why does he always lose the plot on the edge of that 6-yard box? It seems to be in the same position.
Same position
exactly
time.
The same bite. You go, well, it's like,
well,
they played, gone.
Yeah.
Well, what's next?
Yeah.
What's next?
Drawing the line underneath
it. Yeah.
Liverpool obviously done quite a bit of business, but obviously before Suarez went, Ricky Lambert obviously come in, Markovic come in, Lallana. Good signings for you?
Well, they all look to be good signings, but again, you never know till you actually get them in to your little group of players and you can start saying we haven't seen much. So obviously we see bits on the television.
Yeah.
To be fair, I was in Portugal last week and they were sort of raving a bit about Markovic. They thought he looked a player, but at the end of the day, until they actually play in your team, integrate with your players, you don't quite know. And obviously there's a little bit of worry that we'll maybe sign 5 or 6 players, and Tottenham did that and fell apart, if you like, at the end of the day.
Because you've got to
make sure you buy.
They haven't really spent the money though for Suarez, have they? The
sort of business was done before the Suarez deal.
It is, but I'm saying when you bring like six players in, it's quite now, difficult to integrate them into your squad.
Yeah.
But if they're good players, for me, they'll adapt quicker than bad ones.
I agree with Roy, but I think the difference between ourselves and Tottenham is that I think with Brendan and his method, not his philosophy. People don't know about his philosophy and what his philosophy is, but because of his method, he would have an idea about how he wants these players to play and how they can fit in to his method of play. Whereas I think with Tottenham, it's different. They sign good players, and then they all put 11 good players and say, go out and play, which didn't work for Tottenham.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Whereas I think that Brendan would have an idea as to the function he wants from these particular players within his team. So therefore, if you look at Jordan Henderson, could play in different positions, and what's the requirement. So I think we're different to Tottenham in that the players he's signing, you know, he has an idea about how he wants them to play. Forget about how good they are individually, whereas Tottenham has signed good players. I think we needed numbers, which we've got in, and numbers of quality, because I felt last year, while we were lucky, insofar as that we didn't get any major injuries, because I think if we had got major injuries, two or three, or players who lost form, we couldn't bring anyone in to sustain that challenge. Whereas I think now, with players coming in, because there's by no means a given that these players are coming into play. Because if you look at what we consider to be our front three, and you know, if you're talking about Coutinho, Sterling, and Sturridge, for me, we still are the front three.
Yeah.
You got Lallana, you got all these other players. Where are they going to fit in? So for me, they are there. Maybe they play, maybe they won't. But you know, if they do play, or if they have to come on a sub, the quality will still be high. I still believe we need another couple of, we still need some defenders. But I think from the attacking perspective, I think now with Chan there as well, playing wide on the left, I think that's fine. So I'm pleased with what he's done, because we're not going to go through a season again where we're going to use 13, 14 players. I mean, we'll be very fortunate if you do. But I'm more confident in thinking now that even if we don't have four or five players, either lose four, we've got to make a change. We can still have players coming in who can be equally as good.
Well, fans are talking, obviously, with the Luis Suarez money and Suarez going. Obviously, the fans are talking about a marquee signing coming in, which is obviously this top-level Falcao kind of player. Do you want to see one come in, a real name, a real finished article?
I want to just see. I would like to see a couple of defenders. So I'm with John and that. Obviously, Loughran, I quite like the look of him. I think he looks a nice bit of steel about him at the end of the day.
He missed out on Ben Davis, haven't he, at left back? He's gone to Tottenham.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've after this Athletic Madrid left back on loan. But I'd like to see someone, a centre back and another defensive midfield player.
Yeah.
You know, I think we still need a centre back and an offensive midfield player.
I'll tell you what I'd like a defensive back. I am not a great fan of Steven Gerrard playing in that deepest role. And I know you.
Why?
Why? Because I don't think he influences the game that much from there.
Okay.
And because over the years, a bit like John, when John went from playing wide into that, he went into that centre midfield. But obviously, more in there, there was like two of them in there. And John Barnes, you don't know John Barnes defending in front of your back four. Not for the reason that he couldn't defend.
Yeah.
I wanted John to be in and around the box. Stephen, I mean, people say, well, his legs are not the same. They are. Stephen can still get into them positions. And I just think the deeper he gets,
the
people
harder
say,
it's to get in that position.
Well, you just got to let him have it there. You can have it there. You're not going to kill us from that deep. My opinion. I mean, that's what football is about.
The difference with me was when I ruptured my Achilles tendon, I couldn't do what I did before. So not being able to do what I did before, obviously, that's the only way I could play, because I couldn't do what I did once I ruptured my Achilles tendon. So I had to do that. Whereas Stephen, while he may say he's getting old, but Stephen, and I've said this before, Stephen as an 18-year-old, and Roy will know him as a 16-year-old, could have been a defensive midfield player. If that's what he chose, he could have been there. And I think that because of the requirements of Liverpool in the early days, when it was just himself and Torres, because of that requirement, he then played further forward because he can do that. Whereas for me now, if you look at the nature of the squad even from last year, when you're talking about Sterling, Coutinho, Sturridge and Suarez, that's four. If you then need Steven Gerrard as well, who's going to play forward, we would get caught short light in midfield. Mm. So I think that Steven, because of the nature of the team last season, when we had those four attacking players, you're really not going to get much defensively from them. Steven then had to be more of the holding player, really just to supplement that. Now, maybe this year that Suarez isn't there, if you get another midfield player, more of a holding midfield player to play alongside Jordan Henderson, then Steven can play further forward. You know, but I really felt last year he had to do that, because if you look at, I think that Brendan really wanted to play a 4-3-3 with the three, be it Sterling, Sturridge and Suarez, or Coutinho, Sturridge and Suarez, and then three midfield players to allow Steven to get forward. But because Sterling and Coutinho did so well late on, he had to play those four. And playing those four, you couldn't have Steven as well getting involved. So I really think that, fortunately for Steven, he can do anything. So Roy says he'd prefer him to play further forward, and I think at times he can if you're playing a third midfield player. So it really depends now with Suarez going who you actually get in, because I still definitely feel you need two midfield players in there, particularly if you're going to have attacking fullbacks who are going to sit in front of the back four. Now, if it's not going to be Steven, he can play further forward. They still need another one.
But yeah, I agree what you say, and it's just a very fair point, John. And I worry about the way Brendan plays his fullbacks. I don't like the way he pushes them too high too early. I'd like to see them coming into the game rather than both standing up there. I mean, we end up them up there, two centre backs split
out a few times. Bill at home,
and obviously the Stephen slip and everything. But yeah. you need there always should be a bit of cover somewhere. So, I mean, Stephen had the same problem in the World Cup, but I was bad defending behind him from my point of view. But at the end of the day, I mean, I'd rather have 2 years of Stephen at his very best, dominating or trying to dominate games. But I agree with John. We need somebody a definite.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, it wasn't great to see in the World Cup Mascherano play.
Brilliant.
I mean, maybe one of the best players in the World Cup.
Absolutely.
I mean, I thought he was absolutely fantastic.
He was fantastic. You know, but from the Liverpool point of view, I'll tell you why I was so impressed with him last year, because when Roy's talking about we got caught out a few times by playing high up the field, I think that in Brendan's early first 6 months at the club, you could see that. Because what happens is, when we play that way, we cannot afford to lose the ball in our own half. Yeah. Stephen slipping, that's obviously a slip. But generally speaking, I think early on, in the first 5-6 months, you can see us playing that way and losing the ball on the halfway line, and we paid for it. But I have to say, last year, in the last 6 months, yes, you can pick on the odd occasion, but I think we did it perfectly. Because I don't ever think that we lost the ball in an area whereby, in the first 6 months, I think we did a lot when they're getting used to it. Whereas now, we're so comfortable in possession in terms of them understanding what he wants from them that now, they just don't give the ball away. Of course, you then remember the incidents that you do, because you always do. But I really feel that he has it down, and the players are so comfortable with it now that they can do it. I mean, sometimes you see John Flanagan crossing the ball and Luis Enrique or somebody else on the far post. Now, if you lose the ball up there, that's fine. But you don't see us really losing the ball in the back anymore. So that's why I'm really hopeful, and I'm so positive now, because we expect them to improve this year to last year. Because it took them 6 months. Now they're more used to it. They'll be more used to it again. So I'm really looking forward to this season. And I think with that method, even without Suarez, I still think we will be equally as competitive.
You're looking for the young lad now, Andy Sterling, to move on a notch again. Yeah. I mean, he's been fantastic last year at the World Cup. Great experience for him. And showed some great form, whatever. But now you want him to... For me, like when he's always played, he's thinking, well, where's Stephen? If I can give it to Stephen, I'm fine. Anytime he gets past that halfway line, I want him to be like John Barnes. Can I get somebody at that back?
And that's what he did in the last 3 months.
Yeah, and improve slightly from with his end product.
Yeah.
Final ball in, finishing. He could be sensational.
Well, one player who probably might push Raheem Sterling and could even edge into the team if Raheem has a little different form as Jordan Ibe. I've been very, very impressed with it.
Yeah,
on loan last season. He's come back, started pre-season very, very well. He just has really come on for me. I've watched him quite a lot. And
at the end of last season, we were all talking about him getting into the team, and then of course he went alone, which is again great experience. But again, if you're a young lad, the one thing about Brendan, he's giving these young lads a chance. But you've got to take it. You get a chance, you've got to take it, and you've got to prove that. As we said before,
Raheem didn't really take his chance, did he? But Brendan kept that belief in him, and then
that's
he went again, didn't he?
Well,
and
that's the thing. You figure, man management, we look at Coutinho as well, and what Coutinho can bring. I remember Jordan Ibe when Sterling first got in the side, and I watched Jordan Ibe, and I felt he had more about him than Sterling.
Yeah.
Because I think that Raheem was just a dribbler, and he would always dribble. And Jordan Ibe, sometimes he'd play short, sometimes he'd run without the ball, he'd cross, he'd pass, he'd work back. And I thought, but that's what I have to say. In the last 4 months, Sterling has come on so well, because in the last 4 months, he stopped just dribbling. Sometimes he played, I mean, the pass he put through in the World Cup, obviously, he would not have played that pass. He would have been dribbling. Whereas now, in the last 3 months of the season, he now mixed his game up for his end product, his goal scoring,
decision
and his ability
making
to decision
better,
making to work without the ball.
Yeah.
And that's where I think now Jordan Ibe, I don't think that Jordan Ibe, I think
he's
Sterling
now,
I think he's a step behind him. Because unless, but I have to say for England at times, he still dribbled too much. But that's fine for England. But for Liverpool, I think his decision making of when to pass, when to dribble, when to have one touch, when to run without the ball, was spot on in the last 3 months.
His defensive quality.
Absolutely, working back. I mean,
fantastic.
Against Everton. When we won 4-0, what he put that defensive performance he put in against Leighton Baines, who arguably was the best attacking fullback. And if you can do that week in, week out, I think Jordan Ibe is now a step behind him.
Okay.
But a chance to still step up, isn't it? Nice that we've still got, we're buying these people.
Would it be great for on the bench, isn't he? Hopefully, make things happen.
Well, from an attacking point of view, you talk about Lallana, you talk about Chan, you talk about Ibe. I mean, from an attacking point of view now, we've got so many attacking midfield players or strikers or wingers that I'm not worried now about. And the fact that without Suarez still, we still create chances, we still score goals, is more now.
Lambert, I mean, it's a little bit about Lambert. We haven't talked much about him. I mean, Ricky Lambert is not just a 6'2", 3'4" lad. He's
good
got
touch,
ability,
to play.
Can hold a ball up. Yeah. I mean, one thing we didn't have people holding the ball up and bringing other players into the game, it does give us a little bit of option, plan B. Well, I wouldn't say it's a plan B because he's better than that.
But it's an option.
But it's another option, isn't it? Sometimes.
And I think what you'll then see, we are scoring goals from different areas. Because basically, when he gets hold of the ball, you can have midfield players making runs off him for him to lay them in, for him to knock down. Whereas last year, when we got it up front, you know, either Sterling will go and score, Suarez will go and score. So there's no way midfield players are going to score with those two. It's a little bit like when we played with Robbie and Stan, when Roy was managing, Robbie and Stan were scoring all the goals. And because of the way we played for Robbie and Stan, they would score all the goals. And then people are saying, oh, we should score more goals from midfield. If we score more goals from midfield, they would score less. You know, it's not as if you're... So because of the way the team played last year, it was really set up for Sturridge or Suarez to score. Whereas this year, if you look at the way the team will be set up now with different players, I think you can see goals more being spread around.
Obviously, pre-season is well underway now. We've obviously the Bromley game and Preston. The kids, more of the kids, got a run out. All the World Cup stars now are back with the squad. They've gone to America. We've seen over probably 10 years, haven't we, these commercial tours now sort of coming into place where clubs are like Liverpool going to Australia, America, into Asia, all for commercial activity. What's your feeling as a manager? Because we always went to Norway, didn't we? Went into Ireland. Never really went far afield.
Yeah. I mean, we've always had a massive worldwide support, and you'd always like to try and feed that a little bit. Obviously, I mean, obviously it's a monetary game now. It's about finances and different things. But sometimes in the pre-season, sometimes now you don't get many chances to do end of season tours.
Yeah.
Obviously, you got.
Which you did, didn't you, when you were South Africa in a couple of times?
Yeah, you turned it up. I mean, obviously, it was great that we went to Australia. We've never been there. We have a massive following there. I was over in Belfast yesterday, and it must be quite a while since we've been over there. I mean, we've got great support in Ireland, you tend to forget, not just in the north, in the south as well. It's very difficult to feed all these fans in different countries. I mean, obviously, Scandinavia, Denmark, Sweden, Norway. Phenomenal amount of fans. I mean, we were talking yesterday about somebody was in a lounge the other day and they didn't quite recognise where somebody had come from, and we sort of went over to him, and he was from like the very North Pole. He was like he'd come from the North Pole.
You
think, well, you know, well, it wasn't albino, but at the end of the day, you go, why?
Sammy, they're called Sammys. Yeah. You know, the North Pole up in northern Scandinavia. They look a bit Chinese. Yeah. Sammy, who cares? People in North Finland. They're like, they're called Sammy.
They have a big parka coat on and a husky. And
it's a bit like Eskimo.
You ask them where they come from. And they go, but you know, it's amazing where people come to and get to Liverpool games.
But you know, I think that you have to
have... Have you got a ticket? Barnsley couldn't even get a ticket.
But you know what? But in all seriousness, you need to have the right balance.
Yeah.
Because obviously, from the commercial point of view, football has changed, whereby you have to do these tours. But I tell you what has really opened it up and brought it to the attention of everyone is Louis van Gaal. You can see he's not happy about what
he's come out
and said next year they're promising a shorter tour. Because from a managerial point of view, you want your players to be fit, you want your players not to have too much jet lag, not to be travelling around. You also have to understand that why you can spend so much money, and probably you get paid that much money because you do these tours, so the balance is important. But I always feel from a manager's point of view that the manager would much rather have his own way to then say, if you can just go 5 miles every now and again to play, that's what you'd want to do. Whereas he has to also recognise that from a commercial point of view, which will give him money to spend, you've got to then fly 24,000 miles that Newcastle have gone to. So I don't think that managers necessarily are happy with these long tours. However, getting the balance right, and Van Gaal is very, very strong and adamant that this isn't going to be happening.
I hope he really becomes strong and adamant, to be fair, because again, that could upset a lot of things in United.
But he will.
I think he's a good manager, but I have great respect for him. He's going there. Sometimes when you've had a very successful club for many years, if you go in trying to change the world, I think David Moyes went in and didn't change too many things, but maybe he should have done.
Now Van Gaal has a character to do that, and once again, like Roy Hodgson, you have to be true to yourself. If he goes in there and says, well, I just want to go up, he has to go there and say, this is what I am, and either you like me or you don't. And I think that he's strong enough to do that, and people will accept it or they'll fire it. But I don't think he can go and change. I don't think a man should ever go and change the way he actually is. And I think David Moyes did that. I think he said, let's keep the Man United way going and let's just go along with what's going on. Whereas really, he should have gone in there and said, I'm the manager. You do what I say or you're out. Because he was on the mind completely. And Van Gaal won't be. I mean, I saw him in training. I don't know if you saw the things on training where he's shouting and screaming and ranting at the players already. I saw a little thing on Sky. And either you go his way or you go. Or he goes. But I think he'd much rather go on his own terms that I've done what I do.
20 years ago. Yeah. I think you get away with that. I'm not so sure you get away with it nowadays.
Well, if you go Van Gaal with Holland, that's what I mean. That's a problem he has. But I don't think he will change.
He can't change, and he wouldn't want to change because that's his character. He shouldn't change. from a Man United Liverpool point of view, like obviously we'd like to be ahead of them and whatever. They can be disturbing.
Well, one thing so about Liverpool and Manchester United, I think the fixtures, you look at the way they've panned out beginning of the season, they've been quite kind to Manchester United. You could see maybe them sitting on top after six games, can't you? Liverpool's fixtures aren't so kind this season. Took a couple of tough games, Man City, Everton early on. Is that a problem, or would you, is it one of them where you think as a manager, just get them out of the way, it's good to play on now, and the pitches are good?
Okay, you talk about Man City, and obviously we're up there with them now. We've got ourselves back in Champions League.
What I'm saying is, as a manager, do you look, when the fixtures come out, do you look at them first fixtures and things?
You just look at your fixtures, Nick. What's your first fixture?
You've got to play them
anyway. I do, yeah, you've got to play them anyway. But I would think there are sometimes upsets in the early part of the season. Because people don't quite reach the fitness, different things. I mean, it could be anything. I mean, even with us,
United, we can't win anything with kids.
Yeah, so it'd be like again, if you sometimes a lower club playing a top club, you can't turn them over just on a fitness issue, really. So yeah, I just think that you've got to take each game as it comes. You've got to play them all twice. Doesn't matter when you play them, doesn't matter where you play them. I think you can make up little stories about it and talk about they've got better fixtures than us. Well, still got to play the same people.
Yeah, I mean, in some respects, it can actually work against you by playing the lesser teams, if that's what you want to call them, early, because you see so many upsets early on when everybody's confident. So you're playing the team that just come up; they're full of confidence. You really want to play these teams after they've had a good hiding after the first 12 matches, so that you know they're rubbish. Because you see so many teams who now get good results when they're first there until they know they're rubbish. You know what I mean? Because they don't know they're rubbish at the time. I'm going to be a bit unkind. I know, yeah. But so you may think that it's best to play them early, but I don't think it is, because if you look at what's happened over the years, you know, you always see some teams who are up there early on until they find their level. So I'd much rather get it out of the way with the top teams, as much as it seems a little bit strange, but I don't think that's a bad thing.
It cost us probably the Premiership. Yeah. In our time, when you lads playing the smaller teams. Is that like because we think we should beat them, or is it an attitude or whatever? There's loads of different things, but you've got to play them, and you've got to have the right attitude in every game, and that's where you win it. And I think we could pick four games last year, which probably cost us the title, but then most teams can do the same, can't they?
Yeah, obviously Champions League football this year as well. Just touch on that before we finish. You're looking forward to obviously being back in the Champions League, got a great history in the European Cup Champions League. So,
yeah, I'm delighted that we got there. We got there in the right way.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't have to qualify, which would have been a real sort of pain.
You see Celtic now, they've already started, haven't they?
Yeah. You know, but obviously with the World Cups as well, I think it's very unfair, that qualification bit. We got there, we deserve to be there. And it'll be different. I mean, it's quite a strange thing when you go back into Champions League and you haven't been there for a while. People haven't really got a feel for it. But I mean, I think Bendel will do well. I think he's meticulous enough to
experience
to get it right.
As well, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think he's meticulous enough to do it right, and he's that sort of guy. He's on the ball, and I think he's building a squad which will give him a really good chance. Yeah,
absolutely. And I think that if you look at the we don't obviously know what the groups are going to be, but of course now with the seedings and what have you, you can look at very much like a little bit like the World Cup. You know that the top teams will go through to the knockout stages. It's kind of like designed that way now. So Liverpool, I think, would be consistent enough to go through. But of course, then once you get through, you know, you talked about in February playing in the last 16 and quarterfinals, then, you know, you draw Barcelona and Real Madrid. It's a lottery, but I think the least we can expect is to go through in the group stages. And I feel that now with the confidence that we're playing in, as much as we may have a odd hiccup now and then, even in the Champions League group stages, I think that, you know, we will be good enough consistently to go through to the next round. So to then say we're going to go on and get to the semi-finals at least, so whatever, you don't know who you're going to play, and it's so hard. It's so hard, because if you look in the last semi-finals of all the Champions League, it's always just seems to be Bayern Munich, Dortmund, Real Madrid and Barcelona, an English team that even got there. I mean, Chelsea did. You know, but obviously it's difficult now for the English teams. But
we do need to be able to be there. That much better, a little bit much better defensively.
Yeah, absolutely.
In my little time, we remember Paris Saint-Germain.
Semi-final.
I went there, tried to win the game over in Paris. Yeah. I thought we were good enough. I watched them. And before I played two up front, and we ended up getting 10 or something over.
You have to be better defensively.
We nearly beat them at home, but at the end of the day, I lost that game as the manager. And that's it. Not the player. The players didn't play well, but you make mistakes like that.
I thought he had one that night.
Yeah, well, but sometimes it is again. You've that's the European thing. They catch out. They've got good players,
especially in the latter stages. You know, you can get away with like conceding 2 and 3 and scoring 4 in the group stage. But once you're getting into the knockout stage against top teams, you've got to be strong defensively.
Just one last question, then, before we wrap it up. Obviously, last season was a little bit beyond expectancy for what we all thought. Although I did say to John Barnes this time last year, I fancied us, if you remember, over in Ireland.
Fancied us to do what?
To do what we did.
To finish second.
Yeah.
Well, you said you fancied us to win it. There you go. So you got it wrong.
I was 1 out, but you
I said we wouldn't win it. And
you never said we'd win it, did you?
No, I said we wouldn't win it. I didn't think we'd win it.
Okay. But I was close, wasn't I?
You were close, yeah.
So
can you go to the bookies and say you're close, can have some money?
Well.
No.
So what's aggressive?
So I said third, you said first. We're both 1 out.
Expectancy
last year was probably a little bit above what we all thought. What's expectancy for this season?
The expectancy for Brendan, of course, is massive now. That's the problem.
Well, he's rewritten his job title.
That was the problem in many ways. Yeah. But for me, I think if you're going to be totally honest, what you have to say is that our objective is Champions League again. Mm-hmm. And I think to get back in again, that would be a first season. But always at the back of your mind, you've got to believe you can win it.
Yeah.
Certainly now that you're back in the top echelon of teams. But you don't want to start putting the pressure on by saying, yeah, we can win it, we're the best team. But Ino has come out and said, we'll win it for the next 10 years. So, okay, you can say what he likes at the end of the day. Right. He does talk a load of, but that's what he does. I just think, believe you can get back in there. That
top
is your objective. That is your objective. But in the back of your mind,
If you look how tight it was last year, you know, and I agree with Roy, it's got to be top four. Now, top four, finishing third or fourth for me isn't failure. Because although we finish second, people think, oh, the next thing we're going to win, we're going to win it, is that if you're competitive and you can come into the last month of the season, last four games of the season with a chance of winning the league, that's all you can ask.
Yeah.
I think gone are the days when Liverpool dominated in the 80s and won all, and then Man United and then Arsenal. I don't think you're going to get a team winning it year in, year out, no matter what Mourinho says. So if you feel that you can be close enough to be within a chance of winning it coming into the last month, that's all you can ask. So I don't want Liverpool fans all of a sudden, if we finish third, but we're like 5 points off the top, to then be disappointed that it's a disaster. We finished second last year. Yeah. If you're competitive enough to then say, because go back to your point about marquee signings, which help. Liverpool aren't going to be paying 250, 300 grand a week. Whereas Chelsea might, and Man City might, and even Man United might. So, you know, for us then to then say now, because we finished second, that because we're not going to get those players. So, but we don't need those players to be competitive. So if we can be competitive enough to be with a chance of winning it, means even if we finish third or fourth, but we finish 5-6 points off the top, for me, that's okay.
Big onus on the fans not to put the pressure on. Yeah. I agree with John on that. That'd be fair, because it's tough enough as it is. We're back where we wanted to be, European football.
And challenging for the title.
Great way to end. Thanks, lads.
Five Times are hitting the road again this summer, and it's the Champions League heroes heading to Ireland in August.
Andrei Shevchenko, the European Footballer of the Year, star man in the Milan side, must score.
He must score.
It's in it! Bullet saves for Liverpool! And Liverpool have won the Champions League!
This is amazing! Can you believe it?
Jamie Carragher and Luis Garcia host a gala dinner at the Marker Hotel in Dublin, August 20th.
Once a European champion, always a European champion.
24 hours later, Luis Garcia, Didi Haman and Jamie Carragher are at the Waterfront Theatre Belfast, August 21st. Then in September, Barnes, Aldridge and Haman in London on Thursday the 11th. Fowler, McAteer and Whelan in Newport, South Wales on Thursday the 18th. All details and tickets of all those events on fivetimes.co/events. It'd be great to see you there.
Liverpool have their hands on the European Cup again, and this time it's for keeps.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.